Hi, and welcome to this, the 457th episode of the IVMV podcast. On this episode, we're going to look back on the 2016 season, and we're going to look at the impact that the players that signed as free agents before the season had on the team in 2016. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Before we get started, we've been having some website issues for the last week, and thankfully, Lauren and her boyfriend, Ryan, they are helping me get this stuff figured out, and we got hacked, fellas. Hacked, like legitimately hacked. And since the website was down, I kind of used that opportunity to make...
I think it was the Cardinals.
It could have been.
It was either Cardinals or Putin, one or the other.
Same thing, really.
Anyway, I'm sure they're going to face tough sanctions for doing that to us.
I'm sure it was just one rogue employee, right? Just,
yeah, I'm trying to, they're trying to get into our scouting logs. Right.
So I kind of used that opportunity to make some behind the scene changes I've been waiting to make. I suppose now is a good time to mention it, that we gave Kurt his 2-week notice. That was a big change that needed to be made.
Yep. The severance package is good, so I'm sticking around for the podcast.
The worst punishment is he has to stick around for 2 weeks of off-season podcast episodes. Doesn't even get to finish it out in season.
I know, but that's only 2 episodes. I mean, if that was during the playoffs, he would have 2 weeks is like 9 episodes.
And you're wondering why we got hacked. It's always a former employee.
right.
Just like the Cardinals.
No, I made some changes with our podcast feed. And so I guess we'll find out when this episode gets pushed out if everything worked. Hopefully, you won't be able to tell a difference, and this was a smooth transition. And if you had trouble listening to our last episode, I'm sorry, and I'm really glad that didn't happen 3 or 4 weeks earlier. If our stuff would have gone down during the World Series, I think I probably would have just quit and walked away. That would have been... Like, we wow. wait, we wait for that. And then, like, I'm so glad that it happened now. Also, if you do your holiday shopping here in the next month, which I guess that's when you would do it, we'd appreciate it if you would do your Amazon.com shopping through our Amazon link on the website. And it doesn't cost you anything extra, and Amazon gives us a kickback for referring you. And as of right now, the website's not... it's not even active. So I guess, you know, if you try to go there and use the Amazon link, well, thanks for trying. And hopefully, I'm really hoping the website's back up by Monday morning. I'm really hoping for that. So also, I will be in Southern California next week. So if you're close to San Diego and you want to hang out, let me know. Working with a few listeners to organize a little meetup out there. So if you're interested, you can email me, Corey, Corey, at IVMV.com. So we're going to just cover one topic on this episode, and so in theory, this should be a shorter one. And we're going to look at Zobrist, Fowler, Lackey, and Hayward, the 4 bigger free agent signings before the 2016 season, and share our thoughts on which of these 4 made a bigger impact on the Cubs in 2016. And so, Kurt, why don't you start us off with Ben Zobrist?
All right, let's do that. So let's start with the regular season. I think Zobrist had about as good as a 35-year-old season as one could expect. You know, we knew we were getting a good veteran player when they signed him, and he had the playoff experience with the Royals last year, you know, winning the World Series. So, you know, it all looked good as far as like veteran presence, and he was going to be consistent. But I think coming away from this season, seeing that he hit 272, with an OBP of 386, which was a full like 20 points higher than last year. And then drew 96 walks. You know, I think we would all be thrilled with that. And then we all got really excited in May when he hit 406 for the month. So he had a hot streak there. Really good second half. He was also, you know, having that switch hitting bat in the lineup was great. And he, put it to great use against lefties. He hit lefties really well and then had a ton of power against righties. So, you know, on the whole, I think regular season Zobrist was fantastic. So yeah, Zobrist being able to play a few different defensive positions is pretty important into the future, given that Javi will need to get some more starts at second. And so that's kind of your regular season. I think we're all pretty thrilled with how he played. And then, of course, postseason-wise, you know, winning the World Series MVP. The first couple rounds, he was not as great, but then he really turned it on in the World Series. He hit 357 in the World Series, got the MVP, clutch hitting, always great at bats. You know, you knew that when he came up in a key spot that he wasn't going to be an easy out. He offered a lot of protection for Rizzo. And so, yeah, I mean, on the whole, I think everybody's got to be pretty thrilled with Zobrist, given his more advanced baseball age at 35, the veteran presence. He's super consistent. And I, you know, you're probably, we're going to see some decline out of him given his age. But again, I think we can expect probably more of the same for most of his contract. It won't be a huge drop off because, you know, he's not a super high elite player, but he's always, he was signed because of his consistency. And his ability to put together a good at bat. So I think he can keep doing that.
Would you guys ever have guessed that he was going to end up batting cleanup for a lot of the season? I mean, like if you could rewind it back to before, you know, prior to the 2016 season, would you have ever have guessed that?
Yeah, given that, like, before the season, we thought, oh, you know, maybe, well, even before Fowler was signed, we thought, well, Hayward, Zobrist could be a 1-2. Maybe you flip him around a little bit. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, he's batting cleanup. But given that it worked, it makes a lot of sense. But it's hard to project that when they signed him.
Well, yeah, and I think it ended up being pretty big for the Cubs lineup that, you know, Rizzo had him as protection in the lineup. I think it worked well.
Yeah, you know, in Kurt, you talked about his performance in the postseason. I mean, obviously, game seven, that was pretty huge. And I've actually finally gone back and started watching parts of game seven. So I've watched the 10th inning about five times in the last week. I haven't watched anything else from the rest of the entire postseason. But, you know, it was really impressive how he took that at bat in being down 0-2. And I mean, that's just like what he did in that at bat alone. Like, that is exactly what the Cubs were hoping for. A contact guy and you know, somebody that, you know, he said he was taking the first pitch and it was right down the middle. And then, you know, it was a great the second pitch was a really good pitch on the outside corner. And I mean, just to stay with it, and he fouled one off, I remember, and then ended up, you know, smacking the ball down the third baseline. And I mean, that is exactly, you know, what you wanted out of him. And I'm actually like, I need to go back and watch the entire. I want to go back and watch the entire postseason because I feel like, you know, that in the regular season the games aren't as. I guess it's easier to like kind of follow trends and follow, you know, just kind of like the narratives.
Looks on.
What's that?
Oh, your video froze on a deuce face. Oh.
No, but I mean, it was just like in the regular season, it's just so much easier because everything's moving so slow. You know what I mean? And then in the postseason, it was just like a whirlwind. It's all kind of a blur to me the entire postseason, and I really would like to go back and watch all of the series from the beginning just to kind of see what I missed. Because I mean, even with us doing these post game shows, there was just a couple of things that we were like focusing on, you know, that we wanted to talk about, the really key moments. And I think it's hard, you know, as you talk about his performance in the postseason, Kurt, I have a really hard time remembering even what he did in the NLDS or the NLCS because it's just all a blur. So,
yeah, it definitely was not as good as the World Series. I mean, he was a little more average. But I think, again, those kind of numbers don't always tell the whole story because every time he came up, he would, you know, force a lot of pitches. He was able to, like you were saying earlier, Corey, he was able to go down in counts and not have that be such a terrible thing, and work really good at bats. And so, yeah, like I can't read you the exact numbers by round, but he definitely made his impact, even if he didn't hit 350 in the previous two rounds.
Just really fun to watch hit. Would you be willing to say he is had the most impact of the group we're going to talk about tonight?
Maybe we should wait till the end. to share.
Well, I can tell you. I can tell you. I can narrow it down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean.
Well, okay. So that I think that the other really strong contender for the biggest impact on the 2016 Cubs, as far as free agent signings, would be Dexter Fowler. I think, you know, that corny you go, we go thing, it kind of grates on me to hear people say it. But it's true. I mean, he had the best on base percentage year of his career. He got on base at a .393 clip this season, and his first inning stats are ridiculous. He had a 12% walk rate, hit 7 home runs in the first inning. His slash line was .382, .479, .706.
Oh my
479
gosh.
OBP in his first at bat of the game.
Wow.
And huge. He ended up scoring 28 runs in the first inning. You know, a lot of the Cubs as a whole too, they scored the most runs in the first inning of all the innings in a game. This season, first inning was the biggest for the Cubs, and a lot of credit of that is due to Dexter. As far as, you know, we talked about this throughout the season, his defense in center field perhaps being somewhat of a liability. And it really wasn't. The league fielding percentage, league average was 985 in center field, and Dexter was 983. So,
I think he was much better in the field this season than he'd ever been in his career. And I think as time goes on, we're going to find out more about, I can't remember. I was listening to a podcast. Maybe it was, it might've been Dave Cameron, on the Fangraphs podcast or it could have been Effectively Wild, but they were talking about how like the Cubs have figured something out with defense. And I don't think anyone else has really been able to figure out exactly what it was, but their defense was so off the charts this year. And I think when you look at Dexter Fowler, I mean, if it's positioning, it's gotta be something, you know? And I think that over the next few years, someone will figure out exactly what it was and what it is. Cause I would imagine this is something that will continue with the Cubs. But, I mean, I think just looking at Fowler's defensive numbers shows you that there was something going on, and you know, it'll be interesting to see if he signed somewhere else what his defensive numbers are like next year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. This is going to be a tough season for him to match, just in general. You know, and then there's the whole thing of trying to play himself into a good contract. You know. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that had an effect on his performance, but all in all, I mean, among the free agent group that the players that we're going to be talking about tonight, he had the best WAR at 4.2. Only Chris Bryant, Rizzo, and Russell were higher than him. And Ben Zorbas was right behind. So I don't know. I think it's tough to say that, you know, among this group, he didn't have the biggest impact on the 2016 Cubs.
Yeah, man. And you know, I wish they could work out like a 2-year deal. I mean, I know that's not the best thing for him to do. And so, you know, in a way I want him to be able to get the contract that he deserves and the length of a contract that he deserves. But man, I would love to see him back with the Cubs, and I would love to see him, you know, I just think that I don't think the Cubs can commit to like 4 years or you know.
Yeah.
I wish that they could work out a 2-year deal, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, sadly.
I think you guys are right that those are the top two, but let's go ahead and go over the other two and then we can kind of share our thoughts. Next up, let's look at John Lackey. He signed with the Cubs on December 8th, and I think that it was a signing that most Cubs fans were horrified with. I think that was our initial reaction. The idea of John Lackey in a Cubs uniform was kind of hard to fathom. The front office had a history with Lackey going back to Boston, and really throughout his career, he's proven to be a reliable pitcher. I think that's maybe the best word to characterize him. He's had a history of avoiding injury, You had playoff experience, and I think that the Cubs realized that Lackey had something to offer this team. And I had kind of forgotten, even though I think it was mentioned in the, you know, probably by the TV team on during the playoffs, but I had kind of forgotten that he was the Game 7 starter in his rookie season for the Angels. And that's pretty impressive. But yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I think the Cubs needed steady pitching throughout the season, and when they got into the playoffs, this was going to be a young team, and I think a veteran presence, they thought that would be a good thing for this team. I think you could, I really think you could argue if it's a good thing, if that veteran presence means yelling at teammates on the field in the playoffs. I'm not sure. I guess maybe that's another discussion.
And we have argued about it.
Yeah.
We actually did argue about it on a podcast about a month ago, I believe. So
yeah, was that in the I think that was maybe in the NLCS, wasn't it? Or was that in the World Series?
I think it was DS or CS.
Okay, yeah, I can't remember, but I think at that point then you kind of have to question whether or not that is actual leadership. But I would say that the Cubs got what they expected from Lackey. He did go on the DL with a sore shoulder. That was in the middle of August, and I don't know if that was just kind of maybe more of a precautionary thing and just to kind of give him a little bit of rest heading into September. He had a pretty rough July, and then came back. He was really effective in September, and even though he was on the DL for a couple of weeks, he pitched 188 and a third innings, and at the age of 37, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
He pitched one game in each of the series in the playoffs, the DL against the Giants, the DS against the Giants, the CS against the Dodgers, and the World Series against the Indians. But he had a pretty short leash in the playoffs. I believe it was the CS. It might have been that game when he was frustrated and yelling at Baez and stuff. He showed some frustration with being pulled early in that game, but overall, I would say Lackey was pretty good for the Cubs, especially considering it was his age 37 season. His ERA plus was 120, which is the second best that he's had going back to 2007, which is,
wow.
Yeah, pretty impressive. His strikeout rate was 24.1%. That's a career high, and we're talking about a 14-year career. You know, that's not we're not dealing with a small sample size here. So it is pretty impressive what he's doing. His fastball velocity is actually in 2016 was the highest of his career. But he is throwing fastballs less, which could factor in there a little bit, but still, I don't know. I think that it was almost maybe we got exactly what we would have envisioned from Lackey. Reliability, pretty steady, and kind of an ass in the playoffs. Like, I think that's maybe what if we needed to script something in April, maybe that's what we would have expected, is him to
but maybe at best, right?
Right. But I mean, I think we, you know, when you look at like how he reacted in the NLDS last year, or you know, in 2015, when he was pitching for the Cardinals and the Cubs beat him, you know, we saw kind of a meltdown and things. And so you know, I just don't think that – I think that doesn't just go away. Who Lackey is does not necessarily go away. But I think if you can look past those things, because it didn't have a huge negative impact on the team that, as far as we can tell. And, I mean, on the field with his arm, we got exactly what we would have expected the Cubs to get from him. So that's Lackey. How about Hayward?
Well, I think we could probably just start off by saying Hayward did not have the impact we hoped that he would. That's an understatement. But, you know, we've hit on this before. I don't think any of us expect Hayward to continue to be this bad offensively. We could at least get defensively off the table. He won a gold glove. He's continued to be an outstanding right fielder, and he always will be. So I don't think that's going to go away. He's going to be an elite defensive player probably for most of the rest of his career, until he gets really old. So this really comes down to offense. His impact offensively went from being He's never going to be an ultra dynamic offensive player. He's not going to have a super high average. He's not going to hit a ton of home runs. He has hit 27 home runs in a year, but he's probably more around a 15 home run guy. And so you kind of, with Hayward, you want an elite defensive player who's above average offensively. And what you got this year was elite defensive player, well below average offensively. And, you know, I don't want to spend a ton of time going too in-depth into why that happened, because there's probably a lot of theories out there. But at the end of the day, he just didn't get it done offensively. And you compare his 2015 numbers, which were well above his career average, to his 2016 numbers, which were well below his career average, and you see a huge contrast. And so it's probably more beneficial to compare this year to his total season, because even at 26, this was his seventh year. And so he was 30 points lower in batting average. He was, you know, 50 points lower in OBP. Soft contact rate was up. All that stuff was up. BABIP was down, which probably explains partially, but I think it's bigger than that. So, but yeah, I don't know what more you can say about Hayward other than at least offensively, he was a huge disappointment. His overall WAR went from 6 last year to 1.6 this year. And the only reason that was above replacement was because of his defense.
Well, I think what I would want to say about him is his value. I think it became a little bit clear toward the end of the season that some of his value is something that doesn't show up in the numbers, as he is definitely kind of a quiet guy from what I understand, but then, you know, kind of a lead by example type of guy who then though is able to speak up when he senses a pivotal moment, like in the, you know, the World Series in the locker room during the rain delay. Everybody, you know, gave him a lot of credit for rallying the team. And so that could be important going forward. And then also, I mean, just some of the things that he, you know, him, you know, making sure that David Ross and his family have a great hotel room, you know, on road trips. I mean, it just seems like a good teammate type of guy. And so, you know, I'm sure that was a boost for the team, just him being a good teammate.
I completely agree with what you're saying. I think a lot of people would jump on value as in how much he's being paid as well. And maybe that skews opinion a bit. You know, sure. A guy making over $20 million can't just be a good clubhouse cost presence. And again, I'm completely on board with what you're saying.
Right.
But I think that's a lot of that negativity will come in from that side that, oh, well, sure. The guy's making, I mean, next year he's going to make $28 million.
Right.
And if he has anywhere close to the offensive year, he's going to get torn apart even more. Given the fact that he played so poorly and was still able to stay upbeat, he never complained about it. He knew he was terrible, and he was not meeting expectations. And he never made excuses. He just kept working. So, again, I think he's gonna get back to closer to his career average numbers. And maybe that won't satisfy a lot of people, because even when they signed him, we talked about hopefully Cubs fans can see the total package here, because it's not right. Batting average
or it's power runs. That, right. Yeah. Because I think that's where we expected, okay, he's not going to, you know, for the amount of money that he's getting paid, players are going to expect that to, you know, to see that payoff in power. And that's just not the type of a batter that he is. But I think that we expected, you know, his batting average to be decent and on base to be pretty good and him to take a lot of like quality at bats. But it's not really any, you know, look at that last at bat that he had in Game 7. And I mean, that was, I would argue, possibly the ugliest at bat of the entire season for him. But, you know, Andy, you kind of bring up like what he did in the locker room. And I think that does say so much. Like, you know, if I kind of put myself in his position, I think you would think, OK, well, I'm coming up, you know, you're coming up in the order. And I think I would have almost all of my energy focused internally on me. Like, OK, this is what I need. You know, I would be like, OK, this is what they did with me before. This is what they're going to do with me now. How can I identify this and lay off whatever it is, whatever a professional ball player goes through? And I think that says a lot about him that he was able to kind of rally the team and speak up when you would have to be tempted to think like, who am I to you know, try to motivate people right now. Look at what I've done this year.
Sure.
You know, I mean, like, I think that would be, it takes a real leader to be able to motivate through those, you know, I guess, despite those things, to be able to say, mm-hmm. like, hey, which I just think says so much about this team in general, you know, and from the top to the bottom, from Ricketts all the way down, you know, there's just, it's, I don't know. It was 2016 was such an impressive team in season, but, yeah, I think that is, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more stories about, maybe, you know, I think, like, I'm not sure there is a player on this team that I would like to know more about, you know, how the season went. I did not word that anywhere close to decipherable. I guess I look forward to eventually hearing the story of, like, what this season was like for him and what role he did play, because you're right, he is so quiet. Like, you don't even really see, you know, the cameras don't pick up on him talking to guys very much or anything like that. He just seems like he's very kind of internal, which maybe maybe that's who he is, and that's why whatever he said had such an impact on his teammates, because maybe it did just kind of come out of the blue. And, you know, it would be like
see him out there all the time, like putting in extra, I mean, all the time he was putting in extra work, hitting, trying to work with Maley to retool, you know, little things to get better. And so they see all that, they see him, you know, taking care of David Ross, et cetera, et cetera. And then all of a sudden he is being very vocal, and that's going to command the team's attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, well, you know, we don't know exactly how that pep talk went down or anything, but it is, I wish I could have been in that room. I wish I could have watched it. Okay, so that's our four.
If nothing else to see Chapman crying.
Well, we got to see that on TV.
Yeah, but I would feel bad hearing, you know, seeing Russell cry though.
That's true.
Yeah,
because he's so young. Like, it would almost be like a kid crying.
Yeah, now they're junior or whatever.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay, so those are the four free agent signings: Zobrist, Fowler, Lackey, and Hayward. What do you guys think? Who do you think had the biggest impact on the 2016 team?
Okay, my opinion is I think that Dexter Fowler did, with Zobrist a close second. And I think you could easily flip flop those two. Still, though, I really wonder, like, what would the Cubs have done without Fowler, you know, leading off games?
Right.
I mean, yeah, so maybe it's Zobrist, but then later on the lineup gets weaker without him, you know, in the middle. So, I just think I got to go with Fowler.
Yeah, I think I would have done the same. I think I'd go Fowler number one because of the whole package regular season. But at the same time, you know, without Zobrist, arguably they don't win the World Series, and yeah, that's just one inning and one at bat, but it sure was a big one. But yeah, I would probably, I'd do the same, but Fowler first and Zobrist like really, really close behind.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know
what?
We're gonna get a chance to see this upcoming season kind of what the team would have been like without Fowler had he not walked into spring training. You know, so I think we're going to see, like, the impact in his absence, like, what he really did mean to the team. You know, so maybe they're able to perform just as well without him this upcoming season and rearrange some things, you know, throw Al Mora in the mix or whatever. But,
yeah, I think I agree with you guys. I think Fowler had the most impact on this team. I mean, especially with what the stats that you provided, Andy, within his first at bat in the first inning. I mean, that is, can you say again what his slash line was?
Yeah. 382, 479 is the OBP that stands out to me. And like I said, this was the best OBP year of his career. So, be interesting to see what he does going forward, but that is just nuts.
Yep. I agree. And I think that if you're Albert Almora or, you know, I just think like, I think we are going to see a drop off, you know, not defensively in center field, but I just don't think that they're, I don't know who, I don't know who the Cubs have to plug into to bat leadoff that can do what Fowler did for the team. And I think that that was really important, you know, with what Fowler did in the first inning was really important because, I mean, that just, you know, and Madden talked about this early on, like how important it is to score first and how important it is to score in the first inning. And I think that you just, especially with this lineup, like when they were jumping on teams, and I mean, they weren't just jumping on them like with necessarily just home runs in the first inning. Like they were grinding out at bats. Pitchers were really had elevated pitch counts by the time they got in the second inning or the third inning. And I think that it really just, you know, throughout the entire season, it just really helped the Cubs to get into the bullpen and just really beat up on the teams. And I think that, you know, Fowler just set the tone. You know, when you look at it, him basically being on base 50% of the time in the first inning, I mean, that is crazy. And this is just a lineup that, you know, if you can't have a 1-2-3, it's going to be tough to have a 1-2-3 inning in the first inning. But, man, you don't want it to get past those first three because it doesn't get any easier, you know. And I feel like I had a huge, huge impact in really just how the Cubs set the tone in a lot of games throughout the season.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if Zobrist ends up hitting leadoff. I mean, the Cubs don't run that much anyway, you know, so Maybe he is a pretty great option for it. As in like 2009, Zobrist had a 405 OBP. And we're talking about 599 plate appearances. And so his career OBP is 358. And so this year was the second best OBP he's had in his entire career. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of drop off just getting on base wise between Fowler and Zobrist.
Yeah. And I don't think that, I think you summed it up there. It's not going to be a huge drop off. It's not like the leadoff spot is now just a gaping hole. You know, I mean, the Cubs could, I don't know. They have so many options. I think we could dedicate a whole episode to this. And I think that if I, for some strange reason, I would love to make the argument that Schwarber should bat leadoff. But I would love to see it.
Well, he did get a steal. Remember that? He got a steal in the World Series.
That's true. But
so yeah. I mean, he's a running threat,
right,
even post injury.
But yeah, so I think we all three agree. Fowler and then a close Zobrist behind him. So overall, looking back, if you just look at at who they signed in the offseason, Zobrist, Fowler, Lackey, and Hayward, I think they addressed some weaknesses with the team. And even in the case like Hayward, where they probably didn't get what they wanted out of him, he still provided some amazing defense, which the team was lacking. You know, that we knew that before they signed Hayward, and especially before they signed Fowler, the outfield defense looked pretty sketchy. And you know, just looking at those four names, they did exactly what the Cubs needed them to do, really. Resulted in a World Series win, so I guess we'll call it all a success.
Well, yeah, to win the World Series, you had to have gotten pretty fortunate with your free agent signing. So
yep.
They certainly did.
Yep. You know what we haven't done in a while, and we should do here to wrap up this episode, is internet muscle flexes. Do you guys happen to have any?
I have two.
I have a few too. I have two pictures, Instagram posts, and a couple.
Oh yeah, mine are Instagram too. I wonder if ours are the same.
It might. Do you have anything, Kurt?
I don't have any.
Okay. Why don't you give one, Andy? I'll do one, and yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the Cubs regrammed, I guess, some of the holiday family photos of the Cubs players. So
I think we're on the same page.
Okay. Because they regrammed Miguel Montero's, I guess, like a Thanksgiving photo of him and his family. And so most commenters say beautiful family, you know, happy Thanksgiving.
I know what somebody. I didn't have this one, but I saw it. I know what you're going to say.
Somebody even says getting Miggy with it. You know, I mean, so it's all really positive until this one guy says bandwagons.
I saw that one. There's a worst one in there. There's a worse one in there, though. It's higher up.
Oh, okay.
It says something about his daughter.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just like that they took that opportunity to call out Cubs Instagram commenters as bandwagons. And actually there's been a ton of that on Cubs Instagram, because Cubs Instagram jumped a ton of followers, and so everybody's really taken the opportunity to throw out the B word.
Yeah. If you weren't in the first 750,000, then you're a bandwagon.
But it's just like Instagram has only been around long enough where, like, naturally, you know, stuff like the, you know, accounts like the Cubs are going to go up. But anyway, I just, that's stupid.
And just to clarify, what did they say again? Bandwagons?
Bandwagons.
Yeah, so it's not even like a bandwagoner. It's a bandwagon.
Yeah, just bandwagons. Like, I mean, there's so many fans, they're going to need multiple bandwagons to haul them all around. I see the other flex you're talking about. Oh, my gosh.
What does it say? I forget exactly how they work.
It says that girl's eyes are and face are messed up.
Oh, what? It's his kid?
Because like there was like the flash like reflected off her eyes or something. Well, I don't know why he had to go to her face.
Dude, man, that is messed up.
Well, okay, mine are in the same vein then. Well, one of them. Well, the first one though is the same thing. Yeah, the Cubs regrammed. And this was from the John Lackey picture of him and his family. And this person says, "You think his veneers are fine to eat turkey?"
I saw that one too. Oh, man.
Okay. You have another one?
Yeah. Mine is the Cubs regrammed the Zobrist family, Juliana Zobrist's picture of her family. And almost every single comment is like happy Thanksgiving and great looking family, beautiful family. And then this one guy chimes in with ugly, ugly son. The rest is okay.
that was mine too. That was my last one too. Like, oh my gosh. And the kid is like maybe like 9. Oh, what is wrong with people? And I mean, he's a fine looking kid.
He's a 9-year-old boy. Like, that's when we like having beauty contests for 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
Well, I guess people do that, but
like, why would you do that?
Yeah, that's insane. That is just insane.
I have kind of like an honor. That was my last one too. That same.
Oh, okay. Entry. Sorry.
No, but
sorry, I took that.
No, but I did find another one in there that made me laugh a lot actually. So Zobrist is from Eureka, Illinois, and he was supposed to do a parade down there. I think Friday, you know, a couple days ago, they were going to do a parade, and he was going to be like, you know, the center thing, and he was going to do like a. He was going to, you know, speak and stuff like that, but he didn't because he got sick and he couldn't fly, he said. So they rescheduled it. I'm actually going to try to go to it because I'm only, I don't know. I may be only like an hour or so from Eureka. So I think when they do it, I'm going to try to go over there to it and watch. But anyways, so all these people are like, oh, you should still come to Eureka. Come, you know, we miss you in Eureka. There was a whole bunch of Eureka things. And then this person says, hey, Zoe, or he says, ha, Zoe, you should really come to down to Eureka tomorrow, which would imply that this person is from Eureka. But if you didn't know, Eureka is spelled E-U-R-E-K-A, right?
Oh, no.
So this person spells Eureka U-R-Y-C-A. Eureka.
You know what I thought? But I thought you were going to say urethra. I thought you were going to say like a... Well, they're gonna say it auto-corrupted to urethra.
That would have been better.
Should come down to urethra.
No, but like, I mean, you know, I would think that this person lives in Eureka, so you would think that they would know how to spell it. And there's no way U R Y C A gets past autocorrect. You know, like.
Yeah, so they had to actually tap on it to confirm. That's the way they wanted to smell it. Nope. Yep. That's it right there.
Oh, man. I'm also a little bit ashamed that it took me that long to figure out how to spell Eureka by not writing it down.
Well, you don't live there. So
that's true.
I think you have a reasonable defense.
That's true. All right, so that does it for this episode. It was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. If you like what we do, you can help us keep things going and improving by supporting on Patreon. The pledging levels start at $1 a month, and there's perks at every level. You can go to patreon.com/IVMV to learn more. That's patreon.com/IVMV, patreon.com/IVMV. So thanks for downloading and listening, and we'll be back next Sunday evening. And until then, go Cubs!